Wednesday edition of Smith & Jones right here on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Hump Day edition of the show. And what a game last night for the Milwaukee Bucks, winning the NBA championship. Four straight wins for Milwaukee after losing the first two of the series. And it looked like Phoenix was in control. The Bucks get game three and four, take game five, and then win it last night. And it was a nip and tuck game. It was back and forth. But in the end, too much of Giannis Antetokounmpo, who had a magnificent evening with a 50-point performance. An incredible, legendary performance from Giannis in a championship-clinching game. One of the best to ever do it. That one's going to go down in history, no doubt about it, in terms of what we saw from Giannis last night. And of course, the finals MVP for Giannis as Milwaukee wins their first championship in 50 years. And the first for Antetokounmpo in his career. And to look back at where he was in 2013, 2014, when he first came into the league with Chris Middleton on the Bucks as well, to where he is now, the physical transformation, let alone the mental and spiritual transformation of him and the Bucks as a team, and those two specifically as teammates, incredible to see the homegrown talent, in a sense, of these guys getting it done. And Giannis ultimately getting to the promised land. And Jonesy's going to join us here in a couple of seconds to kick off the show. We're also going to be joined by Matt Bonner, NBA champion as well. And I think Jonesy might be on the line right now. I can hear him chatting in the background. Jonesy, you think about what Giannis has done. And let me throw some numbers at you right now. We talked a little bit about this yesterday in terms of comparing what Giannis has done / is doing and how long it took him to get to this point, akin to how long it took Michael Jordan, how long it took LeBron James. At age 26, Michael Jordan was a six-time All-Star. He had won one MVP, and he had zero NBA titles. At age 26, LeBron James was a seven-time All-Star. He had won two MVPs. He had zero NBA titles. Age 26 for Giannis, five All-Stars, two MVPs, one title, one Finals MVP.
Pretty good. Pretty
damn impressive.
Yeah, it is. And there were a couple of things that really kind of strike a chord with me, Eric. I will compare Giannis's championships to Michael's in that he didn't go and, as he said yesterday, he didn't go and join a super team. He didn't maneuver his way to a championship with other great players. He stayed. He said, no, I'm going to do it here with the team that drafted me, the same way Jordan did. And people are saying, well, you know, oh, Jordan had Scotty. Well, let me tell you something. Jordan made Scotty with what he went through and the example that he provided for him with, you know, the infamous Breakfast Club after getting beat up by the Pistons. I value those championships the same way I value Isaiah Thomas's championships and Hakeem's championships. And when you go to a team that's drafted you and drafted you to be the main guy and you navigate the waters, some of them difficult at times, and come out with a championship. That means something to me. To me, LeBron's championship in Cleveland means more than the other three anywhere, Miami or LA, because of he was the guy and he went back there. That's where he started. He went back there. And Giannis did it old school. You and I and our producer, Matt Marchese, were talking during the game on our group chat. He was Shaq-like. Like, they couldn't guard him in the paint. And he decided, well, I don't need mid-range jump shots. I'm just going to score down there. And when I get fouled, unlike Shaq, and he got into a rhythm, all this counting, and he doesn't make free throws. Like, he got into a rhythm. He got comfortable. And with repetition, he got better. And I just thought, at one point, Phoenix was just playing him the wrong way. You know, let's give him space and embarrass him into shooting jump shots. That's not working with a guy who can handle the ball because he's eating up that space and now he's coming downhill at you and you're dead. The way to get beat is going full speed at somebody or have them coming full speed at you. And when you give Giannis space like that and he starts coming downhill, it's lights out. It's lights out. I give him credit. I thought Phoenix played with an over-heightened sense of urgency, almost panic, in the fourth quarter when they couldn't make up ground. You know, Devin Booker throws it over Cam Johnson's head on a breakaway layup. You know, Chris Paul trying to go right, just plain dribbled it like a football and loses the ball on a turnover. Like, those are the kinds of things that, to me, show just a slight lack of poise when it's really, really necessary. And I think that's what did Phoenix in, and knowing at the other end they couldn't stop Giannis. And as we were talking about on the group chat, not a whole lot of threes being chucked up, were there?
Nope, there wasn't. There wasn't, especially in that second half and especially in that fourth quarter, Jonesy. Yeah, you made that point that we weren't seeing a whole lot of three balls. And I thought, Jonesy, that part of this I think you have to attribute to Milwaukee's defense and give them credit for stopping some of this. But for a Phoenix team with Chris Paul, and for a Phoenix team that prided itself all season on being unselfish and moving the ball, and it's not necessarily but one guy. Yeah, okay, we've got Devin Booker, got Chris Paul, but I think it's a team that spread the wealth quite a bit. 14 assists. To me, that speaks to not enough ball movement, because it's not like the field goal percentage was right around, 44, 45%? It's not like you shot, 32, 35, 38%. You were still making shots, but it was a lot of individual stuff. There wasn't a lot of ball movement, and I think that was a key, in my opinion, a problem. And I think the other thing, too, that we pointed out in our little group chat, too, and I'm honestly not railing on the guy. I'm not criticizing him because he's young. He's learning. Hopefully he gets a chance to prove himself again, whether it be next year or in future years and multiple years to come. But DeAndre Ayton, for as good as he was this season and through the postseason, I thought he looked – I don't want to sit here and say he looked scared, because that's not fair for me to make that assumption. But he definitely looked like he was rattled or wasn't as focused as he needed to be, or just frazzled by the moment, because he looked a step slow on both ends, especially in the final 5-6 minutes when they needed him most. It just seemed like he wasn't ready at times. And just he was, again, what do I say to you sometimes, Jonesy, in our broadcast? The vapor lock, where he's there, but he's not there. And that extra half a second makes a difference at this level.
He, maybe the moment was too big for him, but to me, that reeks of inexperience. Just not having been there before, not sure what to do. Not, grasping the gravity of it all. And that's, and to me, that's experience. And, you know, to your point about the individual play, that's what happens when you're, a little inexperienced, you're not quite hardened. Like it was only a 2-possession game for a lot of it coming down the stretch, 4-6 points. And Phoenix played like they were down by 10 at times, rushing shots, just not keeping their poise. And we talked about this a couple of days ago when we were talking about a Carey Price. There's a point in the game where you're on the ropes and, like I said, you're a hockey team and you're down 2-0 in the second period, the late second period. And the other team smells blood and they're all over and your goalie's standing on his head just to keep it at 2-0. And to compare it to last night, Phoenix was, they were teetering and they needed to make a couple plays to steady the ship and to let them look at each other and go, we're okay here. And that's the experience. We saw it with the Raptors, E, in the series against Philadelphia. They were kind of teetering there, and Kawhi takes the ball and he makes a couple of big shots. I'll never forget the three he made in game four when they were down 2-1 late in the game. That was a, man, settle the ship. That was one of those, I'm keeping you in the game by making this play. It's not winning the game, but it's keeping us in it to give us a chance. And I didn't think Phoenix was able to make a lot of those plays in the fourth quarter.
I wholeheartedly agree, and we'll keep the conversation going right now, Jonesy, as we look back to last night, to the season overall, and to much more as the offseason now is officially upon us with the Milwaukee Bucks as NBA champions, and a guy who knows that feeling quite well, a former Toronto Raptor, but a longtime San Antonio Spur as well, and a guy that's got a couple of rings sitting at home from 07 and 2014 as well. The Red Rocket, Matt Bonner, joining us on the line right now. Matt, always great to chat with you.
Yes, great to be on. Great to chat with you guys as well. How's everything going?
All good, Matty.
Yeah, we're doing well. Well, Matt. What did you, just before we break it down into more specifics, your biggest takeaway, Matt, from last night and seeing what Giannis did throwing up the 50-piece and bringing the Bucks their first title in 50 years as well, what was your biggest takeaway from seeing what they did?
Really for Giannis and really that entire Bucks core group of guys, I just loved the story, their journey, not just this season, but the last few years leading up to it. You look at a team that had the best record in the regular season twice in a row and then had disappointing playoff exits, one at the hands of the Raptors, obviously, in the conference finals two seasons ago. And Giannis was coming up on free agency and stuck with the team that drafted him. He said, hey, I don't care if this is a small market. This is my home. This is the team that believed in me. I'm sticking here with this group of guys, with Coach Bud, and get this thing done. And that's exactly what he did. I mean, you talk about someone who just took their game to a whole new level. Everybody's going to talk about the 50 points, but to me it had notes of like a Tim Duncan, someone I played 10 years with. Obviously not the same player athletically, but as far as being a two-way player, someone who could really control and affect the game and make winning plays on both ends of the ball and put his team first. All his media press conference stuff was fantastic. I mean, just his messaging, his state of mind, putting the team first, all about winning, just everything you want from your best player as a leader. And I was just really happy to see them win that championship last night. And, it kind of goes antithetical to a lot of the storylines we've seen, a lot of these trends in the NBA with all this player movement and going small and shooting a million threes, and they just kind of figured out how to do it opposite that, which is a kind of cool, really cool storyline to me.
Yeah, Matt, and I said that, I don't know if you heard it before we came on, I value that championship for Giannis because it was old school. You mentioned Tim Duncan. He was Shaq-like. He was Tim Duncan-like. He was old school, big man. My game is in the paint, scoring close to the basket. I thought Phoenix did a disservice to themselves by backing off and allowing him to eat up the space when they said, oh, we're going to make him shoot from the outside. He's like, no, I'm coming at you. I'm eating up that space. And Matt, kind of like Tim, I looked at like Jordan that way. He didn't go and join a super team. He stayed. And he became the main attraction for people to want to come and play with him. And here's my thing, Matt. Does that mean that next year or the year after, people might look at Milwaukee as a destination and go, hey, I want to play with Giannis the same way people wanted to come to San Antonio and play with Tim Duncan and Tony Parker and Manu and guys that were there, drafted there, and said, we're going to stay here and win it here?
I would want to play with Giannis, absolutely. It was funny, you talk about him staying there. I thought it was a really touching moment when they were on the podium and, him and Chris Middleton were kind of talking about what each other have meant to the other throughout this process towards winning a championship. I thought it reminded me a lot of Tim, Tony, and Manu and all they went through winning those championships. You look at Chris Middleton and Giannis and how far they've come. I thought that was a really cool moment. And, Raptors fans know as well as anybody, if you want to win a championship, you got to be playing your best basketball and healthy going into the playoffs, ideally healthy throughout the playoffs, and you got to catch a break at some point. And Milwaukee caught that break when Kevin Durant's toenail was on the line in Game 7 of that series, that playoff series, two rounds before. The other thing we should mention, when Giannis hyperextended his knee and they showed that slow motion replay, I'm guessing 99 out of 100 people who saw that, maybe more, were like, that's it. Like, he's done. No one's knee is supposed to bend that far in the opposite direction. And he somehow managed to only miss two games and come back for game one in the finals. And you could tell he wasn't 100%, but I think it was important for him to come out and play that game one and kind of set the tone, like, I'm here, I'm playing, just from a leadership position, you know, show the guys on his team and on the Suns, like, I am committed to this. Like I said, just incredible leading by example. Obviously, I'm sure he led in other ways, but it's hard to see that unless you're in the huddle and in the locker room. But just, you know, you could see him at times in timeouts really getting his team hyped up, really bringing the energy, and understanding game time situations when he needed to play with his teammates and when he needed to take over himself. And, you know, offensively last night was a game where he just took it over on himself.
Speaking with former Toronto Raptor, longtime San Antonio Spur, two-time NBA champion Matt Bonner. Matt, one of the numbers that jumped out to me, and I'm sure you've seen it as well. If you haven't, it's pretty easy to understand. You go back to when Giannis and Chris Middleton first came into the league years ago, when they first came into the league together, 15 and 67. They just finished winning 16 games in a postseason to win the NBA championship. You've been on some bad teams. You've clearly been on some very, very good teams and two championship-winning teams. The mental grind, Matt, of a season winning 15, 20, 25, 30 games versus the mental strength that it takes as well to do the flip side, to win 45, 50, 60 games, let alone go through four rounds to win the title. How difficult is it?
Yeah, it's an incredible grind mentally, psychologically. The level of focus you have to have in order to be able to lock in a night-in and night-out basis. And obviously that gets amped way up once the playoffs hit. It's a bigger stage. It's more pressure. You're making adjustments from game to game. Like, every possession is under a microscope and could be the difference between winning and losing. Going back to what Giannis was talking about in some of his press conferences, someone had asked him that same question. I don't know if you saw the clip, and he was just talking about, you know, being present, you know, focusing on the moment, not living in the past, you know, resting on your laurels or dwelling on past failures or mistakes, and not looking to the future, but just kind of being present. And Coach Pop would always talk about, is a genius at this, keeping a team on an emotional even keel throughout that whole process you just described and how important that is. And it really seems like Giannis has reached that point from a sports psychology standpoint where he can keep that even keel. And when you're, like I said, when your best player, when the leader of the team is functioning that way and leading by example, keeping that even keel, it goes a long way. And I think that's definitely something we saw during this run for the Bucks, and it's probably, you can attribute a lot of that to his experiences, like I said, through getting to this point, having past failures, disappointments, going through adversity, but with the same group of guys over in figuring it out together.
Matt, you talk about that even keel, and Eric and I were talking about this. I thought Phoenix played with a heightened sense of urgency bordering on panic, even though the game was close. And I don't know if that was the crowd. I don't know how much of it was inexperience, but they had some turnovers. They had some difficult looks that I didn't think were good shots. That there was a lot of individualism and I'll do it kind of, you know, for lack of a better term, that hero ball. And to I chalk a lot of that up to inexperience. And now you look at their leader, Chris Paul. You know, he's got a sordid mark on him as one of the only player to be up 4 times 2-0 and lose. What does this do for his legacy?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, right? I have nothing but the utmost respect for Chris Paul as a competitor, as a basketball player. I mean, I don't think anyone can argue how competitive that guy is. And obviously his leadership off the court as well, with the Players Association and everything he's done for the league and for the games, is off the charts. It's tough to win a championship. It doesn't happen for everyone. I am a Chris Paul defender. He's arguably the best point guard ever. Definitely in the top three, I would say. And it just hasn't happened for him yet. I love you saw his mindset. I don't know if you read his quotes coming out of the game last night, but it was like, I'm back not retiring. Work. I'm going right back to work. And I'm going to figure this out moving forward. I'm not done. And at his age, with all his mileage and everything he's been through, for that to be his mindset, I think it says it all. Just hasn't happened for him yet. He's going to keep working at it. And like I said, I'm a fan. Nothing but the utmost respect.
Speaking with Matt Bonner. Matt, this is, in some senses, impossible to answer with any certainty, but I'll ask the question anyways. Given this year and how, you know, bonkers this year was in so many different levels with the, you know, you've got a franchise temporarily relocated playing no home games. You've got COVID testing. You've got health and safety protocols and multiple star players, let alone all players, being injured. A shortened season that's jammed into a compact schedule. I could continue to go on. I'm taking absolutely nothing away from the Bucks, because the Bucks have been this team, as you noted earlier, for a number of years now. Is Phoenix the type of team that will be able to sustain and maintain this type of success? Or, putting even free agency and trades aside, which will be coming like madness in the next couple of months, will they be up against it even tougher now with the Clippers and with the Jazz and with the Lakers and the Mavericks and any number of teams in the West, let alone so many teams in the East, where it just seems like we're in this era right now where we could be entering a phase, in spite of some of those, you know, big name, you know, big three type teams, the superstar teams, seems like there's a lot of parity across the league right now. And it's like we could see the Suns potentially fall as quickly as they rose.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Bucks are who they are. Obviously, they definitely caught a break against Brooklyn with James Harden playing injured, Kyrie Irving getting injured and not being able to play after that game too. As far as the Western Conference, what you said is absolutely true. There were a lot of key injuries to the teams that were expected to try to make a run to the finals. And those teams will obviously be much better next season if they come back 100% healthy. I mean, you can go down the line. You know, it was like, it was an anomalous year. Almost every single team was dealt like a major blow with injuries. So, yes, that makes a more difficult climate for Phoenix to be able to get back to the finals. However, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with Chris Paul, obviously, in free agency. That's a, you know, going to be a tough decision for Phoenix. But Phoenix has a lot of good young talent that is just going to get better and just went through a playoff run to the finals where, I mean, once Sharks went down, they were playing with, like, 6 guys, 7 guy rotation. So all those guys got, like, really great playoff, big game experience that's only going to serve them going into next year. I mean, even Devin Booker's still really young. And you know, you got to think this is going to really motivate him on what he's capable of and what's possible. So you look at all those young guys on Phoenix. And if they can use this to catapult them in next year and make a big leap, they should be right back in the mix again, even with all those other teams healthy. But, you know, this is why the NBA is so entertaining, because there's all these variables. And you mentioned it, the offseason has officially begun. You know, it's like a soap opera. It's all these headlines, the draft, trades, free agents are coming, and which teams can make themselves better on the roster.
Matt, I want to ask about, you talked about getting back and how devastating it was for Phoenix. The Spurs were one rebound away from winning a title in 2013. I was on the baseline booking my flight home from Miami, and the rope was up around the court, and they end up losing in seven games. But the next year, come back and take Miami out in five. Like the resolve to do that and come back. What's Phoenix facing right now? If, as you said, in free agency, they can bring Chris Paul and having these young guys grow. Eric kind of alluded to it, the grind to get back there. What's the mental state to go through that now?
It's with the right leadership, it's the ultimate motivator, right? If you keep the gang together, you use that to motivate you. When you come so close to achieving that ultimate success, it just drives you to get back there and get another crack at it. I think we talked about the Bucks journey. That probably motivated them this year after their last two seasons and having the best regular season and the disappointing playoffs, and they kind of kept using that as motivation, I would guess. So Phoenix can use the same thing. You mentioned our loss. Yeah, absolutely devastating. I've been through it 1,000 times. Thank goodness we came back and won it in 2014, or I would have probably dropped off the face of the planet and been making maple syrup up in the mountains of New Hampshire or something.
That's a perfect way to end it, Matt. It's a perfect way to end it. Listen,
I'd have bought it, Matt. I'd have bought it for my pancakes, man.
Absolutely. It would have been the best maple syrup. Better than Quebec.
Oh, wow. You're throwing down right now.
Easy.
All right. You're gonna. This is like a Subway Mr. Sub type battle going on now. Listen, Matt, we always appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us. Hope you and the family are well, and look forward to chatting again soon.
Likewise, anytime. All the best. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Matt.
There is Matt Bonner, former Toronto Raptor, longtime San Antonio Spur, two-time NBA champion. And again, congratulations to the Milwaukee Bucks. Giannis Antetokounmpo with a legendary performance last night in the Bucks' first championship in 50 years. And as we've now said a few times, the offseason is officially upon us. Let crazy season begin with the draft and free agency and trades. And I'm already counting down the days until Raptors training camp and looking forward to next season. When we continue, though, on Smith and Jones, we're going to shift our attention away from the NBA. And, well, we might touch on the big three a little bit from a basketball perspective, but we're probably predominantly going to focus in on the National Football League training camp and camp starting next week. The season is just around the corner, believe it or not. CBS NFL analyst, former Raiders CEO, Amy Trask will join us next on Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Back on Smith & Jones. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Thanks again to Matt Bonner for joining us, the two-time champ, breaking down yesterday's championship for the Milwaukee Bucks. But we shift our attention from the NBA over to the National Football League, with camps getting set to open in about a week, and the season is just around the corner. Lots to dive into with our next guest. And you know, I struggle because I could introduce her as the former Raiders CEO and the chairman of the board for the Big Three, CBS NFL analyst as well. But I've been told, and I know she's cool with this, so folks, don't send me any hate mail. We bring on to the show for the first time, we always appreciate the time of the Princess of Darkness, Amy Trask. Amy, how are you today?
Not only am I cool with that, I will cherish that nickname forever. In my opinion, it's the best nickname ever in the history of the universe. Not intended as a compliment when given to me, but I embraced it, Raider fans embraced it, and I love you for introducing me with that.
Well, so maybe you can tell the audience the quick story of
yes.
how it started. And I love the fact that you just have owned it, taken it, and turned it into a positive mod. If you ever have a wrestling career, Amy, like, you've already got your name, right?
You know what? That's a great point. And although I don't think I'm necessarily suited for wrestling, if I ever, you know, I just might be. Maybe I am suited for wrestling. I will use that. Mike Silver, who was then with Sports Illustrated, he's now with the NFL Network, wrote a piece, a feature, in which it was a feature on me for Sports Illustrated. And in it, he quoted some anonymous league sources, team executives, team owners, I don't remember exactly who, and they said about me, well, you know, behind her back, the implication was not to my face. They refer to me as the Princess of Darkness. And it was very apparent it wasn't intended as a compliment. Well, I read it and I thought, I kind of like that. Raider fans read it and they said, well, we kind of like this too. So we owned it and embraced it. And I will share with you that the other thing that those people said about me anonymously in the article was that I was a smarter, meaner Al Davis with a law degree. So the reason I share that is I used to love looking at Al and just kind of smiling and saying, smarter, meaner, and getting up and walking out the door.
Amy, I was just going to invoke the three words that epitomize and you know, say it all about the Raiders from Al. Just win, baby. Just win. And that's,
there you go.
And that's what it's all about. So we're with you in lockstep. And when to kind of tie this together in terms of winning, isn't this a good time for the Green Bay Packers to approach Aaron Rodgers as a winning minority owner of the Bucks in the euphoria and say, hey, here you go, sign this quick. You know, like when you, like Eric and I used to do, when you got a bad report card and your mom and dad are kind of half asleep in the morning and you had to get it signed, you run over when they're kind of out of it or not paying attention. This might be a good time for the Packers to get to Aaron Rodgers, because this doesn't look good right now, Amy.
If you heard me laugh, the reason I did so was I, too, was the bad report card kid. And I, too, found moments in which to present those report cards that were better moments than others. As to your idea of approaching Aaron now, I think that's a phenomenal idea, not necessarily because his attention will be diverted, although you have a point there as well. What a gracious thing the Packers could do. They could simply say congratulations and try to extend an olive branch in that manner. You know, I think the Packers should have been doing more than the Packers have been doing to reach sort of an understanding with Aaron. But I think your idea is terrific. Reach him now and say congratulations. Now you've proven how good you are, not only on the football field, but as an owner of a team on the basketball court. It's a great idea.
Speaking with Amy Trask, CBS NFL analyst, former Raiders CEO. Amy, you did just touch on this a little bit, but looking kind of bigger picture, how would you have handled this if you were in this situation, or did the Packers mishandle this? I mean, how did we get to such a soap opera where, and now we're on the verge of camp starting and it's still not resolved, and there's still questions as to whether or not Aaron Rodgers is going to be playing for the Packers or what might become of his time in Green Bay, et cetera. How did it unravel so fast and so badly?
Well, I do think the Packers mishandled it. And the example I will use of a manner in which I think it should have been handled is the Kansas City Chiefs. Alex Smith was on the roster. The Chiefs were intent on drafting Patrick Mahomes. So they took Alex into their confidence ahead of time. They let him know, hey, look, we have to ask you to keep this quiet because it's draft strategy, but we want to draft Patrick Mahomes, and they talked it through with him. So on draft day, when they took Patrick, Alex wasn't surprised. He had been taken into the team's confidence. And you know who Patrick's biggest aide was on that team? It was Alex Smith. You know who extended himself in every single manner to help Patrick? It was Alex Smith. And it's no accident or no coincidence that after winning the Super Bowl, one of the very first people that Patrick thanked was Alex Smith. Aaron Rodgers had to learn about the Packers drafting a quarterback on television with the rest of us. I don't think that's the way you treat a player, certainly not a player of the significance and magnitude of importance to your organization as Aaron. Look, I wasn't the person making draft choices for the Raiders. I wasn't even in the draft room, but I was interacting with Al on draft day on any number of things. And I know there were a number of occasions on which he would say to our scouts and our personnel people, wait a minute, I got to call that player. There was an incident on draft day when we were going to trade a linebacker. And Al personally called that linebacker ahead of time to let him know. So it is possible to make these calls on draft day, and I think the Packers should have done so. But they are where they are. And, you know, look, I think they should have been doing absolutely everything possible over the last year or so to say to Aaron, we messed up. We're sorry. Let's figure this out and work through the differences.
Yeah. Admit and fix, Amy. I got you. What, how do you see this playing out? Does he put on a Packer uniform, albeit grudgingly this year, or are we going to hear about something late in training camp where, boom, Aaron Rodgers has been traded for, you know, a package of stuff by the Packers?
You know, look, if I knew the answers to that, I'd be playing in the stock market because we just don't know what's going to happen in that regard. I do think he'll report, and then we'll see what will happen. You know, a lot of things happen in training camp. There, other, you know, quarterback could go down with an injury or could perform well. You know, most people are thinking that he'll be there another year and then there'll be a change. But Aaron is his own person, and he's going to make whatever decision is best for him. There'd be a forfeiture of a lot of money if he doesn't go this year. But he also may not be motivated by that. He already has a lot of money. So we'll see. And by the way, men, I would be remiss while talking about Aaron Rodgers if I didn't give a shout out to the fact that he went to the best university in the country, Berkeley.
All right. We'll give that to you, Amy. We'll give that to you. You know, neither one of us attended, so we'll let you have your glory on that one.
Eric, you know, I was close to Berkeley. I just ran out of money to try to do a PhD, right?
That's so true. Actually, I forgot about that, Jonesy. I should have thought about that. I should have remembered
so
that.
So I'm good with Amy in that.
We are speaking with Amy Trask.
I hope all your listeners who went to other universities know that I said that with a big smile on my face. And while I love my university, Cal Berkeley, I know everybody loves theirs.
I'm sure there are far worse places to go to school. I mean, listen, if we could all be so lucky to go to Cal Berkeley or Jonesy, where was your nephew? Pepperdine for a while, right?
Pepperdine, like, yeah. I'm glad I didn't go to Berkeley, though, because that PhD would have never been done. I would have failed. I would have just hung out all the time.
Okay, but Pepperdine? Your nephew's smart because from Pepperdine, you're on the beach in Malibu.
Yeah, I know. And you don't know how difficult those first year grades were when my brother looked at my nephew and went, really? It's like, I said, hey, man, the beach, what do you expect? You're lucky he's still in school and eligible.
We've come full circle to our bad report cards.
Yes, it's good point. Good point. Speaking with Amy Trask, CBS NFL analyst, former Raiders CEO. Amy, speaking of, you know, California, LA, Matthew Stafford gets stuck in Detroit for so long, finally gets out, finally thinks he's got a chance at maybe doing something special, and all of a sudden, boom, Cam Akers goes down now with a torn Achilles yesterday, going to have him sit the entire season as a result. And are we looking at Detroit 2.0 now, where they're going to have to rely heavily upon the arm of Matthew Stafford if they have any hope of succeeding this season?
Well, look, obviously Cam going down makes it a lot more challenging, a lot more difficult, but I don't think we're looking at that. I think that the Rams organization, they've got some other backs on the roster that they like. They may say, oh, no, we're not going to sign a free agent. Oh, no. They're going to have their eyes on potential free agents. Who knows if they'll make a trade? They may try to add to the backs they have on the roster, but they have expressed that they like the backs on the roster. But make no mistake about it, that is, as you said, a very big loss for the Rams.
Mm-hmm. Amy, sticking on the quarterback theme, I've always said this, and Eric knows, what am I missing with Justin Fields? I thought he was really good, and people were all over Mac Jones from Bama, and I thought Fields, to me, he was kind of a better quarterback fit for the league the way it is right now. But the jump from college to the pros with reading defenses, identifying formations, all of those things, could a kid like Fields make that jump? Trey Lance is the other one. Do you think these guys could push in camp and maybe even get a start when we get going?
Of course it can happen. And we'll see if it will. And you're right, there is a huge jump, but a lot of it depends not only on the player, but those who are surrounding the player. A college quarterback who comes into a team where the offensive line is just rock, rock, rock solid and gives him more time than someone who comes in the league and is running around, you know, to save his life as the pass protection falls down or breaks down, different story. A college quarterback who comes in and plays for a coach who best positions him to be his best. In other words, doesn't take that quarterback and try to cram him into a scheme for which he's not suited, but rather builds a scheme around him, is going to do much better than a quarterback who is crammed into a scheme for which he isn't suited. So all of those things come to bear. It's not just about the player. It's about the coaches and the other men on the roster.
We're speaking with Amy Trask, CBS NFL analyst, former Raiders CEO, but also the current chairman of the board for the Big Three. And Amy, I'm kind of throwing this one a little bit out of left field. I apologize if I'm putting you on the spot a little bit with this, but I saw a story a couple of days ago mentioning the WNBA and their desire, their hope to expand. And a lot of people in Toronto, myself included, and Jonesy for that matter as well, talking about how Toronto seems like an absolute no-brainer for expansion for the WNBA. And I think whether it's Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment or somebody else coming up and stepping up with the money, the expansion fees, et cetera, I think that it would take off here, absolutely. The WNBA would be huge in a major market like Toronto. What about a Canadian market, whether it be Toronto or Vancouver, Montreal, somewhere else, for the Big Three? And has there been any discussion with expansion and trying to continue to build on this brand that's been around now for a few years?
Absolutely. Absolutely. When we started with 8 teams. We're now up to 12 teams. By the way, we have 2 coaches who are women. So you're mentioning the WNBA. Mm-hmm. Lisa Leslie coaches for us, Nancy Lieberman. And, you know, I'll tell you something. We are the only league where women are coaching equals as head coaches with men. And in her first year, Nancy Lieberman won the championship and was voted head coach of the year. And in her first year, Lisa Leslie the same. To answer your question, absolutely, the way the Big Three works and how we did things prior to the pandemic was we go to a different city every single week. Now, coming out of the pandemic, making plans for this season, we weren't able to do that because we had to book our arenas while we were still in the throes of lockdowns and pandemics and travel was difficult. So we're playing in only 2 locations this season during the regular season, Vegas and New Orleans. Our championship will be in the Bahamas, speaking of the beach. But when we are back fully out of this pandemic, we want to go back to playing in a different city every single weekend, sometimes 2 cities per weekend. And Canada is absolutely on the proverbial radar screen. There's a lot of cities in Canada to which we would like to come.
Can you throw us the list, Amy? Because I think people underplay how much Canadians love basketball. I mean, we have, next to the USA, we have more Canadians on NBA rosters than any other country in the world, and it's pretty rabid. We've got our own domestic pro league going here with 7 teams, and it's expanding to 8 next year. So I'm just wondering what the list might look like. I know Toronto's there and has been there, but who else is a possibility?
Well, I'm going to turn to you for that question. I shall interview you right now. You tell me, which cities do you think should be on our list?
Well, I got about 15, but I'll start with Toronto, Montreal, Halifax, Vancouver, probably Calgary, Edmonton, Winnipeg. What'd I give you there? 8 or 9 right there?
Yeah, I think you hit on the big ones, Jonesy. I think you hit on the best ones.
I didn't even go to some of the smaller, crazy places. Yeah, smaller, crazy places like the East Coast in itself. I mean, when they had a team called the Halifax Windjammers, we had people like, I mean, he's one of the, in the front office now with the Milwaukee Bucks. Milton Newton played there from Kansas. You know, Trey Lyles, who's playing in the NBA, you know, his father was an American, played in Saskatchewan. So You know, Regina is another city I should probably mention. We love our hoop up here, Amy.
Well, we did play one game in Toronto in 2018, pre-pandemic, of course. We had a phenomenal time in Toronto. We loved everything about it. But I just wrote down every other city you named, and I will turn it over to our big three team. And when we're out of the pandemic, we'd love to come back. You know, going into my association prior to joining, you know, however we want to phrase that, prior to joining the big three, I understood how big three-on-three basketball was in this country, because you can't go anywhere without seeing people playing it. What I've learned throughout this experience is how big three-on-three is throughout the world. We've had invitations now to come play in South America and Latin America and the Middle East and the Far East. And, you know, as I said, we played in Toronto, and I wrote down the names of all the cities you said, and we look forward to coming back.
Hey, Amy, we appreciate your time as always. Thanks for joining us, and have a safe and healthy summertime.
Thanks for having me, fellow bad report card people.
There
thanks,
you go.
Thanks, Amy.
The Princess of Darkness, Amy Trask, CBS NFL analyst, former Raiders CEO, and the chairman of the board for the Big Three. We'll take the break and come back with more Smith & Jones right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Back on Smith & Jones, getting set to wrap things up. Baseball Central is coming up at the top of the hour, and thanks goes out to Matt Bonner and Amy Trask for joining us on the show today. And I'll end it with this, Jonesy. We didn't get a lot of time to discuss it, but I know they did last hour, and there'll be more on it on other shows the rest of the day. But enjoy watching the expansion draft tonight, seeing as we much know almost everything that's happening already. Like, credit to the reporters and to the broadcasters and writers and everybody that's got the sources and the info. But, man, like, we already know everything that's happened. I don't even need to watch tonight now.
It'll be interesting to make sure that there's no surprises, because, you know, sometimes a deal's not a deal, Eric, until it's actually done. So that being said, good for them. And you got to be excited, especially if you're rolling with the Seattle crew.
Well, and I'll tell you, selfishly, I can find a selfish angle to this. I'm glad that Carey Price is apparently not moving from Montreal, because I've been holding on to a Carey Price Montreal Canadiens jersey for a golf tournament that I'm hoping to auction off as a prize if we actually run this charity golf tournament. So if he's going to be in Montreal still, hopefully that jersey carries some value. If he was traded away, maybe not. So selfishly, Carey Price still with Montreal, Jonesy. Not going to the crack, and we'll break all that down and a lot more on tomorrow's edition of Smith & Jones right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.